So show me your iPhone 7.
So it looks like this, which is exactly what it used to look like.
How do you like the iPhone so far?
It's, you know, it's the same as it used to be, just better. The home button is different. I don't hate it. I don't love it either. Camera, better, visibly better, not a lot better, but better. I like the new haptic feedback. That's nice. The screen is impressive, but it was already impressive enough that you can barely notice a difference. But when you look side by side, it is better.
Ah, okay.
It is louder, which is nice for my alarm clock.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it lacks the jack. I now have 4 pairs of headphones because I have my big headphones, I have my running headphones, I have my iPhone earpods, and I have my Mac earpods because I can't use the same earpods for both my iPhone and my Mac, which is, you know, sounds like the future. You know, it's interesting how in iPhone 7 they replaced a button with like a
fake button.
Pressure sensor with haptic feedback. And you know what's a great pressure sensor of haptic feedback? A f***ing button.
They replaced the button with a button.
Yeah, but worse.
Yeah, good. I have some notes.
Wow. You have notes?
Yeah.
You're prepared.
No. I got back... Oh, this is interesting. I got back to having like a paper notepad, you know, here. It's
Are you serious?
Yes, it's just...
How do you sync it?
I throw it away after that. Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books you read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do day by day working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to our minds. Or we do follow-up for ideas related to books.
Exactly. So today we are following up with some ideas from David and Goliath. So with the last episode where we were discussing how we are David and we are winning. at least in our minds.
Yeah. Ow, that's... Ouch. That sounded bad. Yeah, I feel like we haven't done a terribly great job last week at explaining the concept.
Yeah, but I still have big faith in our listeners that they actually, you know, still understood some of it, at least, what we wanted to convey.
Of course they did, but I thought it would make sense to try to rephrase the main thesis we were trying to make. Recap the examples of it, and I think we have some more examples of this asymmetric warfare, let's just say. Some more ideas about this concept.
Okay,
so again, to rephrase the thesis, the idea is that if you are the David in a battle against Goliath, right? If you're just the small guys, right? A small company or an indie app developer, or you're doing something on your own, you can't play by the rules of your bigger opponent. Try to emulate them. It makes no sense. A bigger opponent is bigger. They have more resources. They have advantages you do not have. And to try to emulate them and do what they do is a recipe for failure, because you can't outdo them. They have advantages you don't have. That's just what makes them bigger. But you do have a winning chance if you play asymmetrically, if you play by your own rules, if you turn your bigger opponent's advantages into weaknesses and take, you know, kind of turn your weaknesses, things you don't have, into advantages, right? Those constraints become blessings in disguise, right? And instead of trying to do what they do, no, do something they don't do, something they can't do, be more efficient than them, be more human than them, do things differently. You know, don't try to be like, oh, don't try to look like you were a big corporation. Instead, embrace that you're not, show it off, and use it as your advantage. Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
No, it makes total sense, especially when I remember that when I was starting out in business, on my first business website, I would put "we the company," blah blah blah. So, like, I tried to be bigger than I was actually. You know,
yeah.
I tried to be the serious company and whatnot. And like the trend right now is a little bit different now with also with indie developers, you know, with app developers, like all these signs, you know, made with love from, you know, Poland, or made in love, yeah, from whatever, San Francisco. So like all these things and people actually showing off, you know, we are just a few guys doing something. Mm-hmm. One of the big advantages, for example, by playing this way, embracing your constraint, embracing your smallness, mm-hmm, your scrappiness, yeah, is that people actually identify with you better than with a, yeah, corporation. Nobody identifies with a corporation. I mean, you know, it's strange. Like, even, you know, if you think about it, you know, Elon Musk is a very good example. We talked about him in the show. We will talk about him in the show a lot more in the future.
You will.
But what I really like about him is, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, they always highlight this in articles. Tesla as automaker is so small, is so tiny. But because there is Elon Musk, because he's doing lots of things completely differently, mm-hmm, like the amount of attention and press he gets compared and love he gets from the customers, from fans of the brand, compared to any other automaker, is just out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And when you say this thing, you know, made with love in Poland, something like that, I mean, at this point now, it might have become a cliche. But at the beginning, it was kind of cute. And here's the thing, a corporation cannot do this. They would never do this. And if they did, it would be fake and it would come through, because you can pick up on things like that. Like, a corporation can never say I, right? And, exactly. And like, if you're, say, an indie app developer and there's just you, why say we? Right? Why try to make yourself look bigger when you're not, and you can't do things your bigger competitors can do? Like, why not embrace your constraints and turn them into advantages?
Yeah, I mean, in our case, for example, I think it was Jason Fried from Basecamp who said that he wants to out-teach the competition. You know, he wants
That's great.
Know, and I think it was a fantastic, you know, way of describing that they, as a very small, you know, dev team from Chicago, like a small programming team, built the software company that everybody admires, you know, that we, you know, follow and love. And this is funny because, you know, we are in the same, you know, in the same segment, you know, of project management. We have totally different apps because we have totally different approaches to that. But we are in the same segment, but we are big fans, you know, and I was just reminded about it just yesterday, because, I mean, these 3 days, yesterday and today and tomorrow, I'm doing webinars, mm-hmm, for our users. And every time we do a webinar and, you know, 100 or more people show up live for hour and a half to listen to me, to ask me questions, I'm like, whoa. I mean, this is like a kind of contact that I have with customers that is like unprecedented, you know, that you can actually, you know, people pay attention to you, they listen to you, they ask you good questions, you know, you connect on a totally different level, and you get, you know, in both ways, you know, more connection, me with the customers and customers with our brand, with me, mm-hmm, personally, and we get to, you know, teach them productivity, teach them, you know, good habits. I mean, actually, and this week we are teaching them the pyramid of communication that we discussed in the previous episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing, and also of course through this podcast, you know, we have, you know, a few thousand people right now listening to it. So, you know, if you think about it, it's it's an amazing thing that we can do, you know, and not being this big company, but still being this, you know, small kind of, you know, the developers who just have very, you know, very like dedicated following in productivity.
Yeah. And here's the thing, when you do those webinars, oh man, I hate the word webinar, but when you do, when you do those, you could not, like, if a CEO of a big corporation could not do this, like they would like, no way they would have the time to do it. And you can do it. And also a personal advantage to you is that you know four languages. And so you can do a webinar in all of them, and they're personal because it's like the CEO, and you're talking and learning from the CEO personally, right? A big CEO could not do this. You can do this. It's, you know, it's an advantage you have by the fact that we're smaller.
Yeah, I was really scared last month when we did the first webinar in Spanish, you know, when I was speaking Spanish, and I was like, you know, my accent is not really very, you know, very native. I speak pretty fluently in Spanish, but it's not really, you know, you can tell that I'm a foreigner. Mm-hmm. And I thought it's going to be like a real problem for people listening. Turns out it wasn't. They were happy. They took lots of it, and they really sent us great feedback. And that's why we're doing it again. And we are, and again, you know, in a big company, there would be like thousands of policies prohibiting me doing something like that, you know, and without, you know, proper translator or somebody else, I don't know, third person, and minding our company policies and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to abide by these rules. We have different rules. I can just speak Spanish, and let's see how this goes. And if people like it, then great.
Yeah, yeah, that's so great. Also funny that you mentioned Jason Fried from Basecamp, because I think partly they taught us that. Like in Jason Fried's and David Heinemeier Hansson's book Rework, they talk about, you know, underdoing your competition and things like that. And so that was a big inspiration. And they do a lot of these asymmetric things in the way they approach certain things. But now it's kind of funny, because now to us, like, it's all relative, but to us, they're the Goliath. They're doing different but very closely related things to us, and that's right. Fine, but they're like the company, you know, Basecamp, the company has like 2 or 3 times as many employees, and they're way, way bigger in terms of, you know, number of users and whatnot. So it's kind of funny, right? Because it's always like depends on your point of view. If you're an indie developer, we would be the Goliath, and that's also right. Fine, right? But so it's always tricky. Like, it's always a balance. Like, depending on what's your exact status and how much resources you have, you'll choose differently on different things, but just this notion itself that you have competitors that are bigger, right? Like, we as a 20-person company and not a 3-person company have advantages of being bigger, and we'll use them, but we'll still have disadvantages of being not nearly as big as many of our competitors, and we'll also use them instead of trying to emulate them.
Yeah, you're right. This is very relative when you think about it, of course. I mean, you know, just think about it. You know, when I founded the company, it was just me doing everything, you know?
Yeah.
including
writing the code.
Exactly. So, and we still suffer this to this day.
Yeah. It's not funny, because it's true.
Yeah, there is still some code there written by yours truly, almost 10 years ago.
Okay. So last week we gave some examples of how we concrete examples of how we do things in this guerrilla development mindset, and I'll just recap them quickly, and I think we'll mention a few more. So we mentioned hiring, right? Instead of hiring from a specific city, we hire from anywhere.
Yeah.
Instead of having a fancy office and competing against fancier offices, we just don't have an office at all.
Yep.
Right? Instead of collaborating, you know, synchronously and having as many meetings as possible and being, you know, on top of everything, we collaborate primarily asynchronously, and we you know, avoid meetings, avoid putting too many people into decisions. We avoid structure and hierarchies and we, you know, we just do things in as light as possible way in terms of communication. Then we discussed documentation and how, like, you know, things like documentation and other processes, you know, formalizations like this are like knives. They're useful, you know, having something documented well, you know, thought through on paper before committing to implementation, it's useful. But instead of doing as much of it as possible, as corporations can and do, and reaping advantages of that, we only do it as little as possible to reap the advantages of it. But then, you know, take the fact that we can't do more of it because we don't have the resources, and instead reap the advantage of having more flexibility to be able to change things on the fly and experiment, and instead of, you know, putting things in stone, just do thing, you know, make more decisions on the fly. Then we also mentioned as an example, like work ethic, right? Instead of being everywhere, giving everyone feedback, be on top of everything, focus, right? Deep work, disconnect, and spend as much time as possible, you know, each employee doing the work, really, really focused work. So instead of trying to do more with more resources, just be more efficient, you know, do more with less.
You know, yesterday when I was giving the webinar about our pyramid of communication, mm-hmm. and I was answering questions, it really dawned on me that this is like the best example of this advantage, like in of this blessing in disguise, mm-hmm. that we don't have a central office, we have had to figure out a way to communicate and efficiently, and because we cannot just walk over to somebody, you know, we learned these other habits, and now, like, companies who have traditional offices actually have to bend over backwards actually to learn our techniques to be more efficient, you know. So something that, you know, what was our disadvantage in theory, and many people still, you know, when they talk to me, they're like, is it really possible that we can work without an office? But I digress. But the thing is that they think this is not possible, but later when they realize how we work, they're like, yeah, I want to work like that, you know? I want to have more time for asynchronous work, for deep work. So this is for me, I mean, you know, giving these webinars, it dawned on me that this is something that's really a big blessing that mm-hmm. came to us in disguise.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of examples like this, like with hiring and offices, it stems from a disadvantage, a lack of resources that forced us to look for a different way that, you know, might not be the best for everyone in all situations, but it forced us to look beyond what's accepted as common wisdom and instead try to find a solution which might actually be better, at least when used correctly, which is, again, work remotely, work asynchronously, etc.
Yeah, the only problem and downside that I see, like being Goliath and being scrappy, being, you know, being small, is that sometimes we, what I found out recently talking to people, is that sometimes we tend to be too scrappy. So, for example, there is like a solution, there is an app that can solve our problem, mm-hmm. and you have to buy it. And we're like, yeah, but maybe I can, you know, get by without paying or having something else. And I like this mindset. It's good. I mean, we should have a mindset like this. I mean, this is our David mindset, you know, how to, you know, get by with not outspending, you know, our budgets.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there's always this calculation, you know, how many hours you're going to spend, you know, solving this problem. If you can just, you know, buy this thing and spend only a few minutes and you're done,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I just had this conversation with one of our designers, and I remember, like, a year ago, more than a year ago, he was thinking, you know, his Adobe, you know, thing was expiring, and he was asking, I don't know if we should buy the Adobe suite because you have to pay the subscription, you know, every month. It's pretty expensive. And I'm like, yeah, but you actually need it for work, right? No, you know, I can actually get by if I use that. And and I really appreciated it. But I said, you know, let's just do a trial, and then you see, you know, after 1 month, he was like, Michael, please buy this, please. You know, he understood how much faster he is, how much more efficient, how much more fun he has at work because he has this tool. So even as a David, you have to strike this balance of not being too scrappy, of not having this mindset of, you know, I'm going to save on everything, because there is a cost to everything. There are no trade-offs. So if you can have better tool set, and I always err at the side of better tool set, then if you can get it, because it will just make you more powerful.
Yeah, we actually discussed this before back in March, and I'll put a link in the show notes. That was on our March reunion, when you kind of had this realization and you told us that, and we kind of reconsidered, because it's like, I wonder if this is partially like a Polish thing, like this kind of mindset of, you know, do I really need to buy it? Can I? And I also had to unlearn it and instead I often, like, when I see I might need something, a tool, an app, a whatever, I have to, you know, consider buying it. It's just, I would think of, okay, how many hours of my work is this worth, right? And then more often than not, the answer is pretty clear. Just buy it. You know, don't bother. It's not worth your time and attention and effort, like even you know, overthinking it and trying to work around it, or trying to get by with lesser tools or without it. You know, sometimes it just doesn't make sense, and you know, just get something that someone already solved.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and if you think about it, you know, even David, you know, in the story, he was really a master of his tool set. I mean, he had this great, I mean, he had this stone and thing, and even that he was mastering very well. He didn't need anything more, which is also good, you know, so he wasn't like, you know, and that's good. But on the other hand, he was mastering what he had. And this is why we have to, you know, define our tool set and be masters of it and use it to our, you know, to our advantage. Mm-hmm. So this is something that we should always think about. And this is also about tool set. People ask me why I upgrade my iPhone every year. And it's the same thing, you know. I can sell my, you know, one-year-old iPhone for a pretty good price, and I just have to, you know, pay an upgrade fee, actually, which is not that big, if you think about it. Because if I think that I have a faster phone with better cameras, better, you know, lots of things, I mean, what they upgrade every year, it's worth for me the whole year of this upgrade, you know, to have, and this is one of my main tools for work.
That's exactly right. This is not something I would recommend to normal people, to consumers, because they don't need this. But for me, it's a tool for work. And even if it's not the most essential tool for my work to have a new iPhone every year, it works out, you know, to be a small enough amount of money that, if I can take advantage of it in my work and like understanding how the future is going, to have access to the new technologies, whatever, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so another example of guerrilla development is not even trying to be more efficient at something than your bigger competitor. It's to just not do something. It's to underdo your competition. So again, a topic we've discussed many, many times on the show. It's something, I don't know you, but certainly something I've been learning and relearning again this year. Say no to things that don't matter, right? It's a lot of things is a zero-sum game. Doing one thing means you can't do another thing. So it's when I often have to like look hard and I want to do something, you know, work-related. I want to implement this really little feature, refactor that thing. And I have to think harder about it. Sometimes that's exactly what I decide I need to do. For example, refactor a piece of code as an investment to make it better in the long term. Sometimes I will implement this little feature because it turns out that, I mean, it might be small, but it just makes the app more delightful and easier to use, and that's a good thing. But oftentimes I'm like, no, I would like this. It would be nice, but it just doesn't matter. I could do this, but I don't have the resources to do it. So instead of doing that, let me focus on the things that have the most impact, right?
I mean, this is the worst thing when you start doing regular weekly reviews and you are doing really regular reviews of your work and what you did and what you didn't do and how you spent your time. Mm-hmm. When you realize that in your optimism, you would want to do this, this, and this, and that, mm-hmm. but actually this is not possible. You have to choose because, as we mentioned many times over, there are no trade-offs. You know, there is like there are trade-offs all the time. You mm-hmm. make trade-offs all the time. So you cannot pretend like there are no trade-offs. And yes. And it's amazing that when you realize that, you're like, all right, so if that's the case, I will have to choose. But once you do that, there is, you know, you're less anxious, you're more focused, yeah. and you can actually make more impact. And I mean, this is something we've been struggling on one hand, but on the other hand, this is something that keeps us focused. And yeah. What I really loved about like the quote from the Essentialism from the book by Greg McKeown that we already mentioned many times over here, what got you there was the focus. Mm-hmm. So when you have some, you know, reasonable success, you have to keep with the focus, because if you stop, right. if you start doing something different mm-hmm. and you start behaving differently, you might lose the focus. And when you lose the focus, you know, with all these other possibilities and everything, you spread yourself thin and you will lose the impact.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, when you start things, you're like, okay, I have no choice, so I'll do things, you know, very efficiently, very you know, very, very fast. And then at some point you start thinking, okay, I got there. So now I'm, you know, now I can be in the big, you know, big boys league. And you start doing these things, which are exactly like not what got you there. And like, again, it's all relative. So over time you do gain advantages. You are able to do things you could not afford to do before. And so that's fine. But it's important not to lose sight of it, right? That it's always relative. Like even, okay, I hate this comparison, but even Apple as the most valuable company in the world, there's so many things they don't do because the focus is important, right? And like think about it. If even Apple decides that there are things they could do, but they don't do because there are things more important than that, then whether you're one person or 20 people or 100 people, don't spread yourself too thin. You know, you're not that special.
Yeah, when you think about it, you know, Apple has been, you know, called up on this that they might be spreading themselves too thin and everything, But they're still not. I mean, I still, you know, they still have just a limited number of things that they sell and yeah. then they're focused on. Now very limited because the new MacBook Pros are not coming. So, but if you think about it, that it's amazing that they still, you know, take care of that. And if you think about all the product lines of all these other companies that are barely making any money, mm-hmm. it's amazing how, you know, how many things they sell and how less of an impact they do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think a thing that's important to stress is don't feel sad about it, about saying no to things. You know, don't be like, oh man, that so sucks. Embrace it, you know, like be happy from the fact that you're focused, that, you know, don't be sad about the thing you said no to. Like, instead of like, look at it as such an opportunity to do something that's way more important, way more impactful for your work, for your company.
No, totally. This is something, but this is something we have to just, that's why we're, you know, highlighting it here in this episode and in many other episodes, is that we really need to repeat this to ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, you know, I have to admit that and confess that for an optimist like me, you know, an optimistic guy like me, whenever there are new opportunities showing up, I really need to, you know, get my act together and just, you know, be able to just, you know, assess them correctly and just say no to most of them. You know, and it's hard because, you know, I, as Michael Hatz calls it, I'm a recovering people pleaser, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I want to please people. I want to be, you know, on good terms with people, but you have to mind yourself. You have to mind your business. And that's why right now, for example, when I prepare a marketing plan for Nosby, for our application, for our, you know, for what we want to do, we have to really be focused and really, you know, mind the our limitations, mind our size, our skills, but then again appreciate, as you said, appreciate them and mm-hmm. just you know, double down on them to make the biggest impact.
Okay, so let me tell you something to the listeners. If you have been with us for some time and you'll keep listening to this show, if we start losing focus, please email us. Please call us out on it.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Another example would be marketing, and I guess that's something more for you to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in marketing is the same thing. You know, we can be doing so many things, you know, to market Nosby. I mean, and to, for example, the problem that we have and we had was that, you know, a nice problem to have actually, that we were successful because of word of mouth. So we didn't really have to do lots of marketing to actually become pretty successful. Mm-hmm. But then at some point to cross the next chasm to go to, you know, to another, you know, to bigger market, you have to start doing lots of marketing things. And just recently we discovered that we cannot do everything, you know, epiphany, and we discovered that we have to get help from real professionals. You know, so instead of, you know, hiring and building a big marketing team like a, you know, Goliath would do, we went to other small Davids. You know, to other, you know, to consultants, to other people to get their expertise, hire them as contractors, as, you know, as consultants, and help us. Only do like a small slice of this, small slice of that, try, give it a shot, see how this goes, see what sticks. And then once we try a few things, you know, to double down on them. So again, we had to think out of the box. I know, because a big company would think, you know, we have to have a bigger marketing budget and we have to have a bigger, you know, marketing department, you know, and we decided not to. We decided to do it a little bit differently. And for now, it starts getting some good results, but, you know, I will report it, you know, at the end of the year. But it's getting better. But and the thing is that again, we decided let's focus on just a few things. Let's try them, but let's try them very well with the help of experts and see how they go. And if they don't go well, we'll change the traction, change the course, and, you know, again, you can't do everything. You can't do everything if you're a David. You have to just, you know, seek out your battles, you know, fight the battles that you can win and that you can try to win, and just, you know, and double down on them and see how this goes.
All right. But how many years have we gone with just the organic word of mouth marketing?
Most of the time.
Right. And see, like, that wasn't so bad, right?
No.
It's slow, but it's effective. Like, who do you trust more, a friend or an ad?
Of course,
right.
Of course, and that's again, that's a blessing in disguise. I mean, the blessing is that we have a good product. You know, it's thanks to maybe us, maybe thanks to our luck. I don't know, but we have a good product. We are not selling, you know, we are not selling things that people don't want to use. Mm-hmm. And conversely, we are selling something that people actually use, and thanks to this, their life gets better. And they recommend it to others, and it just works. So it is amazing. It is amazing that it actually could work like that, you know.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is, again, corporations can always outspend us. So yep. instead of trying to put as many ads as they can in as many people's throats as possible, like take advantage of, like, instead of trying to do that and failing, like, take advantage of where you are, right? Like, be more human and not more like a corporation. Like, don't make, you know, something that's more of an ad. Instead, you know, when marketing, again, like you mentioned, outteach your competition, or like show, like, you're the small guys, or, you know, make something people want to spread, you know, not something that appeals to corporate managers to buy for the whole company, but build something that appeals to actual users, that, you know, so that they love it and they just spread it through word of mouth because they love it, right? That's an advantage that corporations don't tend to have.
I mean, and we keep doing that. I mean, and our marketing actually activities that I mentioned before are actually doubling down on how to actually boost the referrals of people referring Nozbe to each other, mm-hmm. and giving also more value. Like something we're right now focused on. You know, I just wrote the No Office Apps book, which is a new thing, and there will be another book coming up later this year, based on the 10 Steps to Ultimate Productivity course. So we are actually as we are doubling down. As you know, on marketing, but on these kind of activities that got us already here, but just do them better, and that's one thing, and you know that's what we should again do, because as you said, you know, just putting more billboards and other things, you know, wouldn't make any sense. We tried a few high profile ads and we just burned lots of money, and it wasn't worth it. It wasn't, you know, but again, then again, some people have the budget to just, you know, put all these ads. We cannot fight like that. We have to search different routes to get our message across. And right now, you know, with the internet, with so many ways you can boost your message, you know, there's just lots of ways to get it done. So this is what we have to do. And on the other hand, this is what makes it more fun.
Yeah. And we do have a lot to learn about marketing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. Another thing that's I guess close to my heart, and I don't know what you think of it, but I really find it so incredibly useful to have found this process, this way that allows me to read a lot of books every year, which is audiobooks. We discussed this a lot of times, and you know, to me it's like, okay, so how about outsmart your competition? You know, a big corporation can always hire more people, but how about you're just smarter than them because you always learn, because you always invest in learning, which is what I try to do with reading lots of books, and also what we discuss on TGIF, how we kind of have this Friday to learn new things, to explore, to do, you know, deliberate practice, try new things, research, etc. Right? Like build this into the whole process. Like instead of being like a corporation and think of employees like these replaceable cogs, instead, you know, make each one of the employees as smart as possible, and keep making them smarter.
Yeah, and I'm also, you know, I'm also in this camp of trying to, you know, this is also a great thing that on one hand we're trying to be, you know, as David, we are trying to be closer to our users, closer to our customers with doing webinars and very personal touch. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are lots of things that we can automate, that we can just do a little bit faster and a little bit better when we put our, you know, mind to it. And just, you know, very soon we are going to release a new video tutorial of Nozbe for Business and of Nozbe and Nozbe for Everyone, mm-hmm. and which is going to be based on a very, very smart technology that we invented to be able to create the screencast very fast. And these are the things that I really like. I mean, there was this book by Tim Ferriss called 4-Hour Workweek, when he's also speaking about automation and things like that. So if you use automation in a bad way, like, for example, you try to, you know, somebody contacts customer support and you give them an automated message and that's it. This is not the way you're supposed to work. I mean, this is, for example, where our customer support is superior, because we have really people on the other side who are reading your email and actually responding to your email. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we're doing other things automatically where normally people, I mean, the big companies would just hire people to do that, you know, but mm-hmm. but then again, I don't believe in copy paste as your mission statement, you know, I mean, as your, you know, job description. And on the other hand, there are so many cool technologies and cutting edge technologies that you can use to actually, you know, work smarter, work better, and, you know, give more impact as a person.
That's true, but I would say that it like unlike many of the previous things, it doesn't seem as obvious to me. I mean that it very much depends, you know, case by case, because there's some things I can see that I could automate in my process, and that would be great, but it just seems to me that it would take more time investing in the automation than it would save me, right? There are other cases where I spent, say, I spent a few days, you know, automating this provisioning process for iOS development, and that to me was definitely worth it. But there's other things I don't do, and so again, it might scale differently with the company, you know what I mean? Because if there's something, say, 10 people have to do that you can automate by, you know, giving this one person the task to automate this, it might make more sense. Like it might be an obvious decision to make. Whereas if you automate something that only, you know, 3 people have to deal with, it might be easier being the you know, the small guys, not to like invest in your own, like, you know, building your own tools or like researching the tools or whatever, and just do it by hand. So I think it very much depends. But I think what, like, part of what you mean to say is, I know there are tools which are kind of not enterprise ready, let's just say, that you can use, and I use for automating stuff. That, like, some for many, like, corporations, it would be easier just from management perspective to just hire something, because it's easier. When you always have it at the back of your mind that you have to be as efficient as possible as a David, then you calculate, and it will not always be like, I have to automate this, but oftentimes it will be like, okay, we're not hiring our person, we're just automating it.
Yeah, and especially here, you know, as we grow as a team, I'm still, you know, figuring this out, and we are actually all figuring this out, how many people we want on our team, and how many people we really need on our team. And as we discussed before, you know, a salary of a person is a very, very big expense for a company. So we have to really think about it, if we really need another person for this purpose, or we can automate some of this work and then delegate some of the other work to somebody else, and, you know, just, you know, live by like that. So
or outsource it, or use a service instead of building our own infrastructure, things like that.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I wouldn't outsource something which is a core competence. Like, for example, I would never outsource, you know, development of Nosbit to some guys in India or something like that, you know. But on the other hand, you know, as we discussed, some marketing activities that when we want to have more impact, but we prefer to hire outsource this to hire experts and help us with that, because they know this stuff better, and we provide our know-how, they provide their know-how, and then the results get better.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of these things are case by case basis, but being the David, you always have to consider them. You know, you can't just be like, ah, it's fine, whatever. Like, we can do it this way or that way, and you just go with the thing that seems the simplest. Like, no, you have to be efficient.
Yeah, and you know the I don't know if you want to segue to this, but this, you know, it's like, you know, whenever we talk about us being the David, and especially us being without an office, you know, no office company, it's funny how people, when they hear that, they're like, really? I mean, this is not possible that you're doing that. I mean, this can't be done. You know, this is, and what I'm saying is that very often you as a David have to invent something that other people would consider like not doable, like not, you know, you don't do it this way. I mean, you know, it's strange. So, like, for example, we have no office. No, you have to have an office. If you have a, you know, company, you need an office, right? I mean, and there are so many things like that because of the ignorance of other people, we can take it as an even more advantage, you know, because we can do something which is totally out of the box, and out of the box thinking. And many people are just, you know, prisoners of their box. They just cannot think differently. They just think, you know, this is how it's done, this is how it's always been done. That there is this always, my favorite story is that there is an industry there are established players, and there comes a new player. And in the established players know how things are done. They know how the rules are in this industry. And then somebody comes up who doesn't know how the rules were established. They don't know what was, you know, said and done. They just do it totally differently, and then they win. So it's I don't know how this is actually said in English, but and this is kind of the thing that somebody comes from the outside, thinks totally differently, mm-hmm. uses totally different techniques because they were ignorant. They didn't know that there are some established rules or something, and then they do something totally differently, and they just win because they are not because that's the thing. Sometimes, and we have to also, I think this is what you also meant by us always evaluating our options, mm-hmm. is that by always evaluating our options, what we can do in this and that regard, we have to stay alert, you know, not to be stagnant in the same kind of thinking. Because if we remain like this, we will never move forward, and we will never, at some point we will just be obsolete, you know, or we will just slow down. So it's really important to keep evaluating, the options, keep evaluating the things, and in this way always try to think, you know, what would David do? What would out of box thinking be in this situation?
Yeah. As for what you mentioned about the new entrants not like being ignorant about what the rules supposedly are, there's this quote, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win.
And exactly.
It's kind of funny. You know, before the show, in the pre-show, we mentioned Elon Musk.
Yes.
And like, With Tesla and SpaceX, like, that's exactly what he was doing. He did things like, no, you can't do things like that. We don't do things like that. And then he did, and it worked. So, yeah, and obviously it's not a fair comparison in many ways because it's almost like unless you're, GM or NASA, Elon Musk is almost certainly the Goliath for you. But the point is... people's rejection of a lot of things, people's ignorance about a lot of things, can be used as a personal advantage. Like we discuss a lot of the things we know or we've learned or things we just came to realize, and we try to share them and teach them on the show and elsewhere. But at the same time, there's like a lot of people are like, they don't believe you can have a company without an office, or just personally, like a lot of times when I talk about books, audiobooks, on Twitter, there's a few people who always like mock it, or like, oh, you're hearing the book, right? Like, they're always snarky about it, and I'm like, okay, well, it's I wish I could convince you otherwise, but. But if you're unwilling to change, well, I guess that's better for me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I still remember this book, 0 to 1, by Peter Thiel, who's a very interesting person, and he, in interesting kind of way. So,
ignoring Peter Thiel.
But Peter Thiel, he authored. I mean, with full authority, he wrote in this book. Mm-hmm. Remote teams don't work. Part-time people don't work. Like he really, stated this as a fact, as a, like a true fact, right? And I'm like, right. So it's good that I don't know that because if I knew that, it doesn't work. My company wouldn't be all remote, and we wouldn't have lots of people part-time working for customer support who are brilliant people doing their PhD and working part-time as customer support representatives. So, It's good that I didn't know, what Peter Thiel thought about my kind of work.
Yeah, well, the real world is kind of depressing. Glad we don't live in it.